Blog Talk Radio.
Boy. Oh, sugar, we're live. Oh, hello.
Ah, boy. It's going to be one of those days.
What? I'm exhausted, ladies and gentlemen. I tell me sorry. Welcome to another sleepy edition of the Absolute Truth Show right here on Blog Talk Radio. I am your host with the most, the Tire King of King himself. I am the Hot Rod. And on the phone line I have, you know.
Yeah, you know, my foot. Yeah, Sean Black in the building once again. I believe this is episode 193. So,
oh, okay.
We're closing in on 200 episodes. But I almost guarantee you this, we're not going to get to 200 episodes this year, that's for sure.
No, definitely not this year. No. And I'm surprised you didn't even count that high. Oh, well.
Yeah. You know, that education has to go and do something.
Of course. Well, Sean and I decided to do a show. Tell me sorry, we normally don't do our shows on Monday nights, but due to schedule conflicts on Sean Black part, we're doing the show right now. And let me just get this out of the way. Due to Sean Black again of his difficult schedule, this might be our last show of the year. Maybe we might do another one again, who knows, but let me say it right now, Bah Humbug. All that good stuff, New Year, all that blah, 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 blah.
I think what you're looking for is Happy Merry Christmas Kwanzaa.
Yes,
or Happy
exactly.
Festivus. One of those two.
Yeah. Well, not to offend anyone, Merry Christmas? No, it's Happy Holidays, yes. That's what I need
it's
to
happy
say.
Happy Holidays. For those that are celebrating Hanukkah, Happy Hanukkah, as Hanukkah is going on now. If you celebrate Christmas, if you celebrate Kwanzaa, Happy Kwanzaa. Festivus
is all of the above.
And if you're an atheist, good evening. How about that?
Okay, you made your point. Thank you so much. Okay,
yes.
So everybody knows that I hate Christmas. I hate the holidays. I don't celebrate anything. But let me tell you something, Sean Black.
Okay, I got to hear.
I really can't stay. Maybe it's cold outside. I got to go away. Maybe it's cold outside. This even has been hoping that you dropped it in. So very nice. I'll hold your hands and just like that. My mother will start to worry. Beautiful, what's your hurry? My father will be pacing on the floor. Listen to the fireplace roar. So Beautiful, you better. Beautiful, please don't hurry. Or maybe just have a drink more. I'll put some records on while I pour. Those are some of the lyrics of the song "Baby It's Cold Outside." The song that was made in 1960 something, 40 something. I don't know the year. I don't care. Sean Black, this song been out on the radio around Christmas time forever.
Yes.
Now in 2018. Some radio stations are not playing the song because people who are sensitive like you all of a sudden find the song offensive.
Well, don't look
that?
At me in this situation because I didn't start this whole deal.
But why do you think the song is very sensitive or offensive to most people? So, all right, let's be honest, to the millennials today.
Yes, there is the main issue there. I think that with the awareness of the millennial group now, we're starting to see much more awareness, or as the expression was, a lot more people are woke. And seemingly, we're starting to see a lot more of the older cultural references, songs, movies, catchphrases, anything in pop culture is starting to be more and more looked at in scrutiny, much more widely scrutinized based on its material, based on its meaning. Now, you also have to remember, this song came out, 1940? I think it was the 1940s. 39, 40, somewhere in that neighborhood. So we're talking about a much different time. It was a Christmas song, basically, for those that romanticized Christmas songs of the era of those days. It was mostly about a woman wanting to leave. She didn't want to be late to go home, leave her from Christmas with, I guess, a boyfriend. And then the male is trying to basically convince her to stay. Oh, it's cold. Stay, et cetera, et cetera. You went through the lyrics. If you're looking at it just based on the lyrics, it does kind of sound a little bit creepy. But let's not take this out of the context of basically when it was done. This was done in the 1940s, where on television, you couldn't even say pregnant on television back then. You couldn't even have two people in the same bed that were married back then. So this is a completely different time, completely different context.
Yeah, but at the same time, you have, and not just that song, there's other songs that's like, Grandma Got Run Over by a Reindeer, that could be offensive. Or,
yeah.
I saw Mommy Kissing Santa Claus. What? Mommy's
yes.
cheating on my daddy with by kissing Santa Claus? And it go on and on. Now, like I told Sean prior to the show, people are throwing a big fit on network television. They have Christmas shows they show every year, and Thanksgiving shows and Halloween shows, like
yes.
the Charlie Brown. And they made a big fit about Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, how it was promote bullying. And
yes.
And the topic that Sean and I want to talk about a couple of weeks ago about the Charlie Brown Thanksgiving special, where on one side of the table you see all the white kids, Charlie Brown, Lucy, Patty, whatever their names are.
Peppermint Patty.
And you see Franklin, the black kid, sitting by himself on the other side.
In a lawn chair, no matter of all things, sitting by himself in a pink and white lawn chair. And he didn't even sit down initially in the chair. When he first went to sit down, the chair fell out of him and he fell on the floor. So, there's that.
Like when people start to complain about this, I'm like, stop. Okay, I understand the mindset today is a little bit difficult compared to back then, but why people keep talking about it like if there was a little bit of racism back then, who knows? But at the same time, can the kids today just enjoy themselves watching Charlie Brown special over and over again every year? Do we have to bring the type of topics up? K-Dog, welcome.
Hey, what's up, y'all?
Hey, what's going on?
What's up, everybody? Oh, boy. Here we go again. People today are just too damn sensitive. Baby, It's Cold Outside. You know how long that song has been recorded. It's been recorded by countless people, especially the most famous one was made by Ray Charles and Betty Carter back in 1961. I mean, the song was written in 1944 by Frank Lawson, and you know what? It didn't mean no harm back then. Now people are just too damn sensitive, man. I mean, come on, give it up. Chill out. Take a break. Get a drink, damn it.
Okay. Wow.
Somebody's riled up today.
Yeah. Okay.
Somebody put something in his eggnog. I guarantee you that. We're such a PC society now, where people are quick to make sure that everything is 100% right down the middle. They're afraid to take a side, either or, without offending someone. It's more akin to what we've talked about this before, where we talk about how children are raised when they participate in sports. And instead of there being a winner and a loser, everybody gets a trophy because they don't want to disappoint anybody. They don't want to offend anybody.
No, I can understand that.
It's the same kind of thought process where we're in this society, everything has to some degree, be politically correct. Now, when it comes to these kinds of songs and pop culture, et cetera, we know that certain things happen within a certain time frame. We talked about the cartoons back in the day. We know Looney Tunes and Disney cartoons in the 40s, 50s, and earlier had a lot of racial undertones.
Yes,
and some
they
of them
did.
Weren't undertones. They were overtly racist. But those were something
very.
That you don't discredit why it was made. You don't ignore it like it never happened. it's part of history, and it's something that's there. Same thing with a lot of these songs and a lot of the shows that we've seen. Like you stated earlier, Hot Rod, we talked about the Charlie Brown Thanksgiving. I'll give you another instance, the Charlie Brown Christmas special, where everybody knows the whole point behind Charles Schulz and his creation of the Peanuts is kind of like an existential experience with the child and why Charlie Brown always feels down. I mean, if you look at it now, he sounds like he needs some Prozac. He says he's always depressed.
But Sean,
beyond recognition in the Christmas special. I mean,
Sean, let me tell you this. You know Charlie Brown, historically speaking, you know Charles Schulz based it on his own
life.
You know that.
Yes, exactly.
He did. And, you know,
so
he said like
means...
this, that, you know, because he felt like he was a loser when he was a kid. So he based it on himself. I mean, geez, come on. The controversy.
Charlie Brown had mental illness then back then, 15 years ago.
I think he was. First of all, I don't know too many third graders that have one strand of hair and is always complaining about what's wrong with the world. But in general, we're talking. This cartoon came out in 1965, so
right. We
know based on the comic strips, Charlie Brown always was looking for a higher meaning of things, but he also didn't know much about himself. I don't think it had anything to do with a mental illness issue as much as it was kind of like, well, you know, what's the meaning of life? What's the meaning of this? Why do these things happen?
Right.
And in the process of him trying to learn who he was essentially bullied by everyone else because he was such a klutz. He didn't know what
to do. And no one really liked him. And, you know, he kind of felt bad. But then at the end, Charlie Brown always came out on top.
Okay, see, you guys, for one, wow, this may be the first time ever in 4 years, you guys have hit two strong points about Charlie Brown that people don't seem to realize. Talk about a cartoon that was made God knows how long ago.
1965.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, old man. A cartoon that was made so long ago. About being bullied, you know, being depressed, the ways of life it was back then compared to now. Now, we call it mental illness. We call it, oh, this kid needs help, or this kid will go out and commit suicide, or go out and start killing other kids in school. Why?
But he always came out on top, didn't he?
He always came out on top. So why people don't take that type of message, but always want to focus on the negative?
Because the first time you see the negative, you have to respond and react. As opposed to seeing the entire episode through and figuring out how Charlie Brown came out on top. The whole meaning behind the Christmas special part was him trying to figure out what was the meaning of Christmas. Everything was commercialized, et cetera,
right.
et cetera, et cetera.
And Linus explained it to him.
Yeah, by the time he got to the end and he understood to himself what Christmas was about, even though he was still depressed, he walked off. The people that were bullying him realized Charlie Brown's heart was in the right place, so they decided, you know what, he may be a blockhead, but his heart's in the right place, let's help him out. And then they surprised him in the end and did a great job of making him feel like what Christmas was supposed to be about. That's the message of the cartoon.
Okay, now I want to go from one topic to another topic because we have a lot to talk about. Continue being negative, and we have a new caller. I will get to you, new caller, in a few minutes. Let me just get this out of the way. Talk about being negative. Kevin Hart, comedian, actor, has been selected as the new host for the Oscar Awards, an honor gig to have. Well, of course, there's always had to be backlash and controversy of how people came up with tweets that he had about, I don't know, it was gay jokes or whatever.
Yes.
But it happened back in 2009 and 2011, where he made some gay slurs overall. Now, he made a statement. He apologized. He said people change, people grow up, blah, blah, blah. Sean and Kato, since we talk about the Charlie Brown and people, and maybe it's cold outside, to something like this, do you think because of the PC era, people are overreacting on something that happened almost 10 years ago via tweet? Sean?
I don't think people are overreacting as much as... This is what I see. Any stand-up comedian, especially from what I've seen in the African-American community, stand-up comedians, they go by the same old jokes, the same old tropes, the stereotypes that you hear, the gay person, the gay mannerism, or the overweight man that eats too much food, or those kinds of jokes that were always told in stand-up. And I remember Jerry Seinfeld, not that long ago, actually said he was afraid to go and do stand-up at, like, colleges and things like that, because we live now in, as we said before, with this PC culture, that people are now much more sensitive to the jokes and the material in those jokes. So when you look at somebody like Kevin Hart, who is probably saying in these tweets these homophobic things and slurs to, quote-unquote, try to be funny, not realizing that that later on, and most people don't realize this, but once you do something on the Internet, it stays there forever.
Exactly.
That at some point, as you evolve, you may not feel the same way you did 10 years ago, and you've changed. Those still look as a scarlet letter that are hanging right over your head until you address it. And what he did is, today, I believe it was today, I saw him, he put up a video where he was, I guess, laying in bed explaining what he said. And he said, too many people are looking to denigrate things that somebody said in the past, and then you try to evolve, and then you can't keep somebody down for something they said in the past. Now, if he truly feels that he's evolved from those comments because he started deleting those tweets, if he started really thinking about that kind of thing, maybe at some point he's going to come out and then say, you know, I apologize for the things that I said. Let me help and learn more about the LGBT community, et cetera, et cetera. If that's what's going to be the case. But, as I said before, this is the society that we live in, where if you said anything negative in the past through the Internet, through social media, if you're a celebrity, you're going to be called on the carpet for it as a hypocrite if you are making profit off of something that was negative then that you didn't answer for today.
You know what, and that's my problem overall. I see what you're saying, Sean Black, but I think people need to – I'm calling it as it is. A lot of people are a bunch of wuss. They need to get their head out their asses.
That's
and
what I was
let
saying,
it be.
Man.
So, you know, what happened in the past, happened 10 years ago. Not like if Kevin Hart had went out there and raped someone, different story. And I know you say in the past, you know, you have freedom of speech, but once again, there's consequences to it. Is this him? Is Kevin Hart? Kevin Hart became big for telling jokes like that in the beginning. Let's be honest about that. And there was a lot more worse jokes than that. So
there's been a lot of comedians that have said far worse, because Kevin Hart, okay, yeah, he made a few couple of jokes, but what about other comedians? I mean, people are going to condemn them too. You're going to convict them of doing something wrong, because a lot of comedians make jokes. That's what a comedian is there to do, but there have been more jokes that have caused controversy more than others.
And let's go even further for the people that don't know old school jokes. What about Red Fox? Richard Pryor.
Yeah.
The old Eddie Murphy. If they found Kevin Hart jokes offensive,
George Carlin, Lenny Bruce,
George Carlin,
and on and on. I mean, you can go and you can find a number of comics today that have said jokes worse than what we've heard. And you don't hear anything going on about that as well. Although a lot of the comedians are now becoming a little more sensitive with their material. But we've listened to, you know, like you said, Eddie Murphy and on and on and on.
Richard Pryor.
It happens with a lot of comedians. But you also have to know your audience, and you also have to know the area that you're in and the time period of when these jokes, tweets, et cetera, were released. Because if we saw what happened with the guy from Kramer, was it Michael Richards?
Michael Richards
has completely disappeared off the face of the earth since he came out with those
racial slurs.
A slur that he said some years ago. It's been almost, what, 6 years or so? And he completely disappeared off the face of the earth.
True. I mean, I agree. Like I told other comedians, you need to know your audience and the time frame. There's certain things you cannot say at a certain time. But people are like, ooh. Like when Dave Chappelle came out, when he came out with his comeback tour, he touched a lot of things. And, like, woo, like, was it too soon or whatever? But not everybody will laugh at your joke, and some people will. That's the comic life. But I just hate when people bring up past stuff. Like, before I bring dirt on Sean Black and K-Dog, I want to make sure I have no dirt on myself. But nobody's perfect, you know.
Yeah.
You know, let Kevin Hart do his job. Like he said, people change, people evolve. You say stupid stuff in the past. K-Dog, you say something stupid Sunday night. I'm not going to repeat it on the air right now. But I let it go, you know.
If we were all graded on things that we said when we were teenagers, no one would listen to us at all.
Exactly.
You know? I mean, the whole premise of getting older and evolving and maturing is that you learn from the things that you did in the past. You realize some of the things that you said were either wrong or off base, or you've changed your opinion about particular views and issues, and your thinking changes, evolves, it grows. It's supposed to.
Okay.
It's what's supposed to happen.
Okay. Let me tell one quick personal story, and then I'll go to the caller. I'm not going to lie to the people. Back then, because of my so-called religion, back when I was younger, I used to think gay was a sin. I did not like gay people. Until I evolved and better myself, then I love everybody, you know. But in some religions, K-Dog will tell you, some religions, they'll teach you, even the Catholic Church, that gay is a sin, that gay is wrong. And that makes you dislike gay people because you think what they're doing is sinning, you know. But what do you do? So if I get a gay, you going to stop me because the high-rise said 20 years ago that gay was sin? Come on. And to me, that's BS. If I'm still saying that right now, that's the problem.
Especially since you're now much more informed about the ideals behind certain things. There's one thing if you're a teenager coming out of school and you're just saying a bunch of nonsense to make people laugh. It's another thing to actually be informed enough and then continue to say that kind of stuff.
Okay, so we have a caller. You're on the air right now.
Yeah, man. What's going on, y'all? It's Nas in Atlanta.
Hey, Nas.
Hey,
sorry about
the
wait. Thank you for waiting. Yeah, sorry about that, but go ahead, Nas.
No, ain't no problem with waiting. I wanted to listen to what y'all had to say, man. Like, I agree with y'all in one sense and disagree in the other. So, in one sense, sometimes this ain't about an apology. This ain't about somebody changing their lives. Sometimes this is the internet just wanting to dogpile on somebody. And, you know, if somebody's kind of high, people want to see them kicked off the pedestal. So there's a lot of that in play, you know, when you start talking about these situations where they're searching somebody's Twitter and finding something that they could, you know, kind of condemn them for. So I agree with that part of it. But when the person does say, damn, okay, I got some new information, makes an apology, and the people still are jumping on them, oh, that apology wasn't good enough. He didn't mean it. Then you're like, okay, man, what is this really about? Is this really about the issue, or were you just trying to jump on me? Now, where I disagree with y'all is this. When we throw this term PC around a lot, we use it to describe a lot of things. And most of the time, it's something we disagree with. But in all reality, every society advances. When I was a kid, I could go to the store and buy cigarettes for my aunt when she would give me the money and send me to the store. Now, you can't do that now.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is that advanced?
Now you can't do that.
Right. Is that society advancing, realizing that something was stupid and should be upgraded? Because if you live in an industrialized nation, you have leisure time for entertainment and also to think about your society and the way it's run and the things that you won't accept or will accept. If you're trying to teach young men about consent, and you know what I'm saying? Baby, it's cold outside. Does that really go together? So I could understand some people being like, wait a minute, I don't know if this is something we should be celebrating. You know what I mean?
But
their point on that.
Yeah.
But now, is it your job to, your child or your niece, nephew, son, daughter, isn't it your job as a parent or as an adult to teach the child what's right, what's wrong overall?
I think that's a part of it, though. The idea is to say, not to say, oh, burn the digital copies of this. Don't ever let this song be heard. No, I'm saying you would teach a child to say, no, that's really not a way to go about things. Back in the day, that was acceptable. That was a different time. But in this era, it's different. Think about Obama or any other presidential candidate. When they ran back, 8 years ago, they said, what? Marriage is between a man and a woman. Y'all better get the hell out of my face with all that bullshit. Then when the polling changed, all of them, I've had a change of heart, and they started getting them votes in from the LGBTQ folks, and they changed their position because society had changed. And we got to be careful not to become old men kind of yelling at the cloud when society is moving at a different speed than we are. It is what it is, but you ain't putting those genies back in the bottle.
Yeah. And I don't think there's much of an issue with the idea of evolving your thought process. I think when you talk about being politically correct, I think it's more of saying the right thing so that you sound like you care about other people or other ideas or other opinions, when in all reality you know you feel the complete opposite. It's one thing if you've actually changed and evolved your thinking so that you now know, you know what, that's just wrong. A joke that somebody would have told you 15 years ago is now all of a sudden no longer funny to you. And that's mostly because your thinking has evolved. You've become an adult. You've grown your competency about what is supposed to be funny and what isn't. And at some point you go and you look at it and say, you know what? I used to actually think that was funny. That's just wrong. That's stupid. That's not, et cetera, et cetera.
What may have been funny, like, perfect example, for us who were growing up back in the days when we would watch a show like Little Rascals, and you would see the characters like Farina, Buckwheat, Stymie. Yeah, at first, when we're kids, we don't realize that, but then as you grow older, people are like, damn, do you see the racial stereotypes that were going on back in the days in film, man? And, hey, man, that ain't funny no more.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, but, like, comedy is very tricky and difficult. Not everybody could see or share the same jokes, and that's part of life, you know? Once again, we agree to disagree. That joke may be funny to Nas, but not funny to me, but in the end, who cares, you know?
Hot Rod, perfect example, and you brought this up to me a few weeks ago, and it's something that we didn't get a chance to talk about. You talked about Laurel and Hardy, which was a perfect show way back when it was in the movie theaters back in the 20s, the 30s, and the 40s.
Right.
Perfect example, Laurel and Hardy, or I should say more of Abbott and Costello. There was complete bullying around in that as well. Every time something happened, Costello would get cracked in the head, or he get something thrown at him.
He was the
yelled
fall
at,
guy,
et cetera. He was the fall guy. But
don't forget the Three Stooges. That's like even worse.
Yes, exactly.
More
well, that's just completely over the top. But if you brought out the Abbott and Costello routine, nobody had ever heard or seen about them, and you did that today, it would be so offensive. People would look at you like, what? Why is he beating up this guy? What's the tall guy? Is the tall guy so insecure?
But guys, that's what we talk about. Like, back then, that was funny to us. And to me, I'm not going to lie, I'd be in tears right now. But if you play that right now, the PC or whatever, or even anyone, oh, that's bullying. That's offensive, blah, blah, blah. How can you guys watch shows like that? Well, it was entertainment back then in that era. Now we have digital world. We have nonsense. We have other nonsense. We have Trump to distract
I hear the argument, but when I see Housewives and real hip hop and all this, whatever that reality show is out there, those shows are still getting made. The content is still out there. So the people who aren't offended by it or don't have a problem with it, they can find all the raggedy content they want to. And the people who are extra PC and want everything sanitized to the fullest, they can find that boring shit online to watch too. So, I mean, everything is out there. It's just what you choose to take on. But these social media things where an entertainer is giving their personal opinion on stuff, yes, there's going to be backlash from the faction that feels like you're shitting on.
But, Nas, it's funny that you brought that up because how can you watch Love and Hip Hop where they fight, and we know how crappy that is, but someone would be offended by the lyrics of Baby's Cold Outside. Or you'd be offended
Kevin Hart said. Hip Hop, that show was doing numbers every week. That show was doing millions. They got spinoffs and everything else. So there's no lack of content that's not PC. That's what I'm trying to say. Like, nobody being censored. You can do all the raggedy shit you want to out here. And you can do all the boring NPR-style, you know, PC to the fullest content. You know what I'm saying?
Like
you do all of that.
Well, like Sean Black said, know your audience. But I want to get to the next topic because Sean Black was crying over the last 2 days over his former president, George Bush.
Oh, Lord.
Now, what I say about that person who died, some people would get mad and they would want to all of a sudden get politically correct. The people who are conservatives who would get all, don't you be talking about him, he died. You know what I mean?
And that's why this is absolute truth. We're going to talk about his legacy. And you know what? I'm glad you brought that up, Nas. What do you think about the legacy of George Bush? You think he did a great job? He did an okay job? Or he's just a regular bastard who just died?
He was a murderer responsible for a lot of genocide across the globe, the drug war, AIDS epidemic that he didn't address, financial problems in the country. He's a terrible person, one of the worst human beings to ever breathe on this earth. And if you really look into him, you'll see what I'm talking about.
I cannot argue with you before I go to Sean Black because I'm not going to lie. I don't know much about this. I don't care about politics. But, Sean, did what did I tell you change your mind about George Bush, what you told me earlier?
What this is, I know about a lot of the things that Nas just brought up because this is something that a lot of African-Americans that lived in that time period will remember mostly about. When we see what happened with a lot of politicians and celebrities that pass, especially more with politicians, they gloss over some of the negatives, and then they tell you about what kind of a great person he was. He was a family man. Now, I'm not going to deny. I'm not going to say that George Bush was a horrible person per se. This is what I will say. I will say that George Bush probably was a really good man away from the politics that he reigned in with. There are people that get into politics, they become congressmen, they become president, they become whatever. Outside of their jobs, they may be personable, they may be family men, they may care about their fellow men. But then when their interests are in bed with who they govern, et cetera, then you have that clash. And I give you the perfect example. For those that remember Bush back in the 88, when he was running for president, he went up against Michael Dukakis. And I know you know exactly where I'm going with this, K-Dog.
Yeah.
He ran an ad, which was basically supposed to be a dumping on Michael Dukakis as far as his being soft on crime, was the Willie Horton ad, which is the most infamous racist ad that's been seen
since
Trump. Now, Willie Horton was a Massachusetts a murderer. He's an African-American. He was a murderer that raped a white woman while he was on furlough from prison. And what happened was this ad was run through Bush's campaign, and it was supposed to see if you're light on crime, then murderers like this are going to run roughshod through the country. And this was a nudge at Michael Dukakis, who was the Democratic candidate running for president at that time. And that one really rubbed everybody the wrong way because it was completely opposite of the portrayal that Bush had at the time, being a congressman, being a leader of the CIA, being vice president and then running for president. So that was a complete juxtaposition to what everybody knew about back then. But even though with that, he hired somebody, he nominated Clarence Thomas to take over in the Supreme Court for Thurgood Marshall, another African-American judge. Colin Powell on his watch into the military.
He was the Joint Chief of Staff.
Joint Chief of Staff, exactly. So there are instances of racism that clash, where you don't know when one side came across as really offensive and really disgusting, and then on the other hand, he looked like he was doing things to kind of balance out some of the bad that he did. But as you said, Nas, there were a lot of other things negatively that happened on his watch.
Well, can I tell y'all a quick story?
Go ahead, Nas.
This could kind of shut the door on who this guy is. When they wanted to start their war on drugs and really ramp it up, he wanted to say that there was crack being sold across the street from the White House. Problem was, that wasn't happening. So he told the DEA to set up a buy across the street from the White House. So a young brother fresh out of high school, they said, hey, we want you to come to the White House to meet us. The DEA agent to set up the buy. Kid said, man, I don't even know where the White House is. Kid was from D.C., hood kid. So they get him to come over, meet. They make the buy. They arrest him later. And then George W. does a press conference. He has a vial of crack, and he says, this epidemic is sweeping the nation. There was something sold across the street from the White House. That brother ended up doing 10 years in prison, fresh out of high school, based on this dude wanting to tell a narrative during the drug war. CIA director. When you say CIA director, that ain't just a job. That means this is right after COINTELPRO. This is when they were eliminating people, creating death squads in South America. This man is responsible for a whole lot of dying in this world. So, I mean, it just needs to be called out. And us in our community, we see this all the time, and we call it BS when we see it. When we go to a funeral and some preacher gets up there and somebody who damn near terrorized the whole neighborhood, and the preacher starts acting like this dude was some kind of angel, all of us in the crowd go, oh, hell no, we know who that dude was. You know what I mean? So why are we acting different in another context? You know
what I'm
saying?
Okay, well, Nas, pick your poison. Who you gotta have then, Bush or Trump?
I reject the question. F both.
Okay,
man. Damn.
You know. I'm like, I hear all this stuff about Bush, but compared to what's going on right now, you know, pick your poison. Talk about pick your poison. And Sean and I talked about this earlier at the funeral yesterday. That moment took this away from the funeral where you saw Trump, the first lady, sitting next to Obama, Michelle, and the Clintons. That moment alone is the internet of the day.
Yes.
It's like, wow. The body language was amazing.
It was tension. You could tell there was tension in the air.
It was phenomenal. If Liz could kill, Trump would be dead right now.
Yeah. But you got to be careful in saying that because you might have Secret Service follow you after saying that.
Yes. Secret Service could kiss my black ass. After all, my name is Sean Black.
Yeah, well, yeah, right.
Hey, Sean.
But in all reality, though, looking at that was almost like looking at a soap opera. You were expecting something to happen. Uh-huh. And when he came in, and I said this to Hot Rod before we went on the air, I said that when Trump and his wife Melania came in to the church area for this open casket to look at, he almost walked in like Don Corleone. He had a mob-like aura. He had a sullen face. He walked in hand in hand with the wife. They didn't really look at many people inside, just walked down the aisle. They went to their seat. They sit down, and the hand gesture to shake the hand of former President Obama and his former first lady, and Bill Clinton looked like he was almost expecting a handshake, because he kind of looked in the direction, but then he kind of kept it away, and Hillary didn't want any part of it, and that's because if you threaten to prosecute this person, lock her up, you threaten to put her in jail, and you're going to sit right next to them in the same pew at a funeral for a fallen president? Wow, that had to be stressful.
Like, that's not drama.
Yeah, I think those are the worst moments, though. I think those are the things he likes the least. The ceremonial stuff where you're supposed to be gracious and nice and shake hands and do all of that, and you're supposed to be, you know, carry yourself a certain way. I think that's the part of this job that dude hates the most. You know what I mean?
I only think he hates it
because it's not about him. That's the only part of it.
Yeah.
If it has nothing to do with him, that's why.
Let me tell you something. He didn't want to be there. Look at it this way. Let's break it down when it comes to this guy in funerals of noble people. Remember Barbara Bush, the family, the Bush family requested that he not show up.
Yep.
Senator John McCain's funeral. John McCain, on his deathbed, requested and said, do not let this man come to my funeral. Now, former President George H.W. Bush, before he died, said like this, you know what, let him come to the funeral, you know. But then after, remember, he criticized Trump in an interview. Remember that.
Mm-hmm.
He was like, let's let him come. But you know what? He came to the funeral. Every funeral of a former president, the president always speaks. He was not allowed to speak at this funeral. They did not want him to speak. They're like, you're coming to the funeral.
That's a good point. You can't have someone like Trump speak because, like Sean was said, Trump would find a way to make it about him.
Yes,
exactly.
He'll go off the rails.
But,
that's exactly what will happen.
But I want to give it off to Brother B. Brother B, like to add on one more thing before we go to our last topic.
Hey, Brother B, what's up? Hello?
Okay.
Yeah. Well, I'll just say one quick thing if he's on his way on the air. But
wait, y'all talking about me again? Stop talking about me.
Of course you're talking about
me. What's up, brother?
Yeah.
What's up? Greetings and salutations. Listen, I'm at work. You know, I'm always at work. So I had to mute because I didn't want you to hear the background noise like when you hear K Dog in the kitchen cooking.
But I'll just say this one last thing before, and then Brother B, you can take it, is that even though we know what kind of things that Bush did in the negative sense, I am not going to take away the fact that the man was a war hero, the man went and served, World War II veteran, did so many different things as far as for his country. So in that sense, the man was a legitimate hero. He didn't find bone spurs to decide that I'm not going to get up and go and do my thing and serve for this country. He did a lot of things that none of us have enough guts to probably do. And that's since he did that.
Or since? Yeah, but does one good action take away all the bad actions? Because
I'm not saying
these are monumental things we're talking about with this guy.
Yes. I'm not trying to gloss over anything that he did that was bad.
That's what sounds like, Sean Blake. It sounds like
I'm trying to be fair and bring up the fact that he wasn't just all the, you know, the son of the devil. You know, I think a lot of people would look at that. I don't think that was clearly the case.
Okay. Yeah, and Mussolini made the trains run on time, but Mussolini also did a whole lot of horrible things. Like,
exactly.
I'm just saying, man, we can only give him so much credit for the good when the bad is so heavy.
I think with Nas, this one, Sean, you give him way too much credit. Like, you give him, I don't know, he did something wrong for 95%, but you give him credit for the 5% right he did. But, Brother, what do you have to say about this?
Well, I mean, you should know. I don't really care. You know,
that's what I thought.
I mean, my whole thing is this. Listen, politics is going to be what it's going to be. You know, no one really comes in. Well, some people may come in this game to try to do good, but somewhere along the line, everybody's hands has to get dirty. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I've been doing security for like 26 years. I came into it with one ideal, but then after a while, you know, like I said, my professionalism is subject to your attitude. You know, sometimes things change. Things
please,
change. And you
please,
have
Brother
to do
B,
what
we,
you have
we don't
to
want
do.
No confession on this show over here. We don't want no trouble. No confession on this show.
It's not so much about compassion. It's just the fact that, you know what, sometimes certain things have to be done for the protection of the people or for the protection of your own interests. Simple and plain. Once again,
okay.
I said the protection of your own interests. As well as
okay. Well, quickly, we got 15 minutes left. I want to talk about the NFL. Sean Black, quickly, why are you upset with the NFL right now?
Well, for many reasons, but the most recent reason, we have two teams, two different players, kind of the same result to a degree. First one, Kansas City Chiefs running back Kareem Hunt, finally cut from the team after it was revealed that back in February, he got into an argument and a physical altercation with a female. I believe it was at a club, not at a club, at a hotel, I think. or at a casino, some place that they were at. And they were both drunk. I think they had just been on a party boat or had been drinking, et cetera. They got into an argument. It was alleged that she said something to him, got him riled up, and he pushed her and then eventually kicked her. Now, after all of the things that we've heard from the NFL over the years, especially the commissioner, Roger Goodell, talking about there's going to be zero tolerance, we're going to make sure that everything happens. We know about the Adrian Peterson situation. We know about the Ray Rice situation. Nothing was done until it was shown on video. The NFL and the Kansas City Chiefs had this sitting on this instance since February. We're now in December. We're 10 months later, and finally something happened. And now we're finding out other instances have happened since then in that area. Reuben Foster, linebacker for the San Francisco 49ers, who had been arrested the weekend before he was cut about domestic violence. Initially with the girlfriend that he was with, she initially stated that she lied about a previous instance that happened. She came out on one of the talk shows earlier in the week, I think yesterday or today, and said she lied about that to protect him because she loved him. In any event, he was cut. The problem is, instead of the teams doing their due diligence about the domestic violence part, he was snagged up by Washington. Washington, the same team with the racist nickname, the same team that was looking for a quarterback who lost two of their starting quarterbacks to broken legs, ironically. So maybe they're not drinking enough milk or something. I don't know. Whatever the case. They were looking for a quarterback. And then you have a quarterback who is better than the ones that are there on the team that they didn't even go and pick. And the reason why that is the case is because, as we've seen before, it doesn't matter what you do in the NFL. You could shoot somebody. You can stab somebody. You can beat a woman up. It will not do anything to deter the NFL teams from keeping you on their roster if you can help them win. And that's the bottom line with this league, and it's been going on for years, and it also goes to show you how transparent they are with the lip service that they've been giving to all of these people and all of these players, that they go ahead and say, we care about them, we care about the fans, we care about player safety. We know that's a bunch of garbage. And also, what does that say? What message does that send to the women who are fans of the NFL that watch this and realize we don't give a damn about the women because all we care about is this guy who's beating up somebody, beating up a female, is getting another shot. First crack, the second he got off of the waiver wire, they picked him up. Now they're both not able to play.
And Sean, you also forgot, you can shoot yourself in the leg too and still get a job.
Exactly.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
Classical burns, yes.
It's absolutely ridiculous.
I think Sean.
But if I may ask, where are the women's rights groups? Where's all these Me Too women and everybody? Like, where's everybody at?
Well, you also have to remember that stuff just really broke within the last week.
It doesn't matter.
And that's the thing. You would think that a lot of this would have happened much more readily. They knew about it since February.
Where's the noise, though? That's what Brother B's asking. Where is the noise about this overall? Our problem is a couple of things.
That's where the backlash came from. There's actually some trouble in their front office now because these women's rights groups and other groups are putting pressure on them now for signing him. Remember, this is a guy who dropped in the draft because of domestic violence allegations.
Exactly.
And then afterwards, all of this happened. And something people got to know about the NFL. No, it's not moral. It's about capital always. But it's also about what they see as the world to be. But this is the thing about players. Players who get in trouble, those players are more controllable. You got two strikes. You're going to do exactly what we tell you, or we're going to run you out this building, which is why players who get in trouble are always going to be, snatched up. But somebody like Kaepernick, who says, I have certain principles, and I'm not going to listen to what you're saying, they don't want no part to that. Independent thinking, going against the grain, they don't want no part to that. But if you do criminal activity, they got your ass on the leash to a degree.
Hold on one second.
Is that the problem of mental slavery? Is that the new form of slavery right now, Anas?
No. I wouldn't say anything like no, it's not mental slavery. It's just a thing of they want controllable athletes who they can dictate. And if you don't fit that mold, they don't want you a part of their culture at all because that blows up the whole game. The whole game is about you playing on this non-guaranteed contract, risking your health and your future to get at this money. So they dangle the money in front of you. Now, the moment the money is not more important than your principles, they don't want no part of you.
And I think it also depends on what the NFL prioritizes as an offense. Whereas, if you remember Dante Stallworth, who is no longer in the NFL, was a former wide receiver, actually ran down and killed a man in his car because he was drunk.
Yes, I remember that time.
He spent some time and was back in the NFL. Where you have, depending on what certain situations are, and I don't know how they litigate certain things, but in general, depending on what your transgression is, it will depend on whether you get back in the league or not. You beat up a woman, apparently that's one of the first offenses they clear away now that they have the commissioner's exempt list, which means until the investigation is done, which is the first time that they used it, was on Adrian Peterson after the incidents happened with his son, allegedly beating his son with a switch and injuring him. I believe he tore his groin, his kid's groin, because he went too far with the switch. In general, women have always been treated like second-class citizens when it comes to sports leagues and how they adjudicate what the punishment is for these male athletes that do this. And this is the kind of thing that a lot of people look at the NFL as flaming hypocrites, because they never seem to go and do what they're supposed to do when it comes to these kinds of things. And in all reality, Foster shouldn't have even been made available after the arrest.
Go ahead now.
Real big on this, too, that we slip on. This is what the fans call for. The NFL is not qualified to adjudicate laws, things like this, to begin with. That's what we have a court system for. But the NFL fan base is so full of people who are jealous and hateful and envious of the players that they watch. They support the team, pretty much got a, you know, really passive-aggressive relationship with the players. So when the players make mistakes, and Roger Goodell came in and said, I'm going to be the sheriff, handing out suspensions and laying down the law, the fans supported it, and then Goodell got so much power, it got to the point of where it was all up to him making decisions. And, of course, like I said, the NFL is not qualified to handle stuff like this, so they blew the decisions every time, and now they don't know what to do. So they're saying, we're just going to punish proactively and hope things work out better on the other end. They watched that Ray Rice tape and said, okay, 3 games. The public saw the tape and said, what the hell are y'all doing? So you see what I mean? Like, this is not something they're qualified to do. That's what we got a court system for.
Okay, so Brother B, I like the comment that you made earlier about the Where's the Woman's Right movement. Why do you think there's not so much noise from these movements?
Y'all keep saying that, but that's not true. They are pushing. That's why this whole
hysteria is going on right now. I want to hear them as strong as they used to be back then. But go ahead, Brother B.
Well, I will say, listen, I haven't heard much on, sorry for the background noise. I haven't heard much on anything. Usually the media likes to, you know, push all types of controversy or whatever's going on, but I really haven't heard anything. And, I mean, I have a serious problem with that because you can, I mean, really, I have to say it. You can go after the whole Bill Cosby thing and blow that up in the air, but when it comes down to these NFL players, they're consistent with the domestic violence. And it's like, it's okay. So you can't,
yeah, brother, you gotta look into this a little more, man. Because
you can't condemn one wrong. You can't condemn one wrong just to right another. That's why I say F the NFL, because they're hypocritical. And it ain't nothing but a bunch of dudes who want to ball out, try and get money, and say, oh, I'm taking care of my family and this, this, that, and the third. But yet, in the same token, you know you're being enslaved. You know the chain is around your neck. You know you're the lapdog.
And if we're gonna keep it, a buck, it's 53 men on every roster. The domestic violence rates in the NFL are similar to society. It's a small few,
true,
but we paint the whole league with those actions. And really,
because
sports is just a microcosm of society. So things that go on in society are going to go on within sports.
But my thing is this. Once again, you can't condemn it on one end and not condemn it on the other. And that's
why I'm saying you got to just look into it a little more. These women groups are the ones putting the pressure on now. Like, that's going on, man. Like, if you haven't looked it up,
well, there's no,
you,
they're not being
on.
Visual about it, I tell you that.
Okay.
They
well,
were very visual for everybody else.
I got to throw this to Kato. Kato, one of the major problems that Sean mentioned about the hypocrites of the NFL, that we hear about these stories, but no action takes place. The minute we see a video, like Reuben Foster and what is that Baltimore Ravens guy? Rice, I think his last name
was.
Ray
Rice, right.
Ray Rice?
Right.
When
you
see videos like that, go ahead.
Here's the problem that I have with that, and you're right, the NFL is very hypocritical, because especially when you hear reports of domestic violence that are going on with these players that they have been committing against women, and, you know, it's usually swept under the rug until, like they said, a video surfaces. Oh, my goodness. Oh, this is going on. Well, I'm sure that was not the first time that this individual was beating up on a woman. And, you know, you're giving him a contract. But yet, here's my thing that I'm about to raise up. Y'all giving these women beaters, these abusers contracts, but Colin Kaepernick for standing up and telling the truth of what of the injustice that people face in this country, he don't get a contract, does he?
Well, they don't want that the distraction. That we all know that part already.
Having a room full of a locker room full of reporters after a game. It promotes your brand, it makes you money, you get the quotes.
Mm-hmm.
They love a circus atmosphere. This was about him being defiant to
that's
what this
different.
Is about.
I'm guessing
which
is why
that collusion case.
So he's being defiant.
Leaves so hard,
being defiant
man,
and taking a stand for black folk.
I'm guessing defying the ground is much more powerful than the knee.
But you can beat your woman. But you can beat your woman.
Beat your woman. Wow. You know, and that's the sad part about it. A woman's being beaten up, but yet you're giving the woman beater a contract, but yet someone who's standing up for something is standing up for something. You don't want to give him a contract, but you're giving a woman beater a contract.
Well, let me tell y'all something else that's even worse. If Ray Rice was on the wasn't on the bad side of, and wasn't averaging 3.5 yards a carry because he was getting older, if he was still the back he was a few years ago, Ray Rice would be working right now too.
That's true. But I think that's the problem we have with all the message that's sent out. You take a knee, you don't get a job. We slap a woman around.
A society should not be taking its moral fucking marching orders from sports leagues. That's the first thing. You know what I'm saying?
But unfortunately, that's the way society is sometimes. And I think that's what we've been talking about all night is society. They follow one thing and not the other, you know. You people get offended by a baby's cold outside, but you're not offended or upset that a man is hitting a woman.
Yeah, but see, I think most people are offended. I think that's when people can get on their soapbox and show you how good of a person they are and say, hey, that's wrong. You hit a woman. Now, you tell that same person it's his starting running back and they got a chance at the playoffs, look up the excuses Chiefs fans are making for Kareem Hunt right now because they got a good team and this is what they
should
punch.
Yeah, but this is the one who used a woman as a punching bag. Damn, man.
Or I'll tell you an even better example.
I got a quick question. So when are you know, that go get him, boy, win my team, and then turn around, you the NIGGA? Because, you know, I know that.
I give you this example that I told a friend of mine.
40 seconds.
What would you do if the Chicago Bulls found out that Michael Jordan was a woman beater? Would you sit on the bench? Or you know he's gonna win you some championships? Or are you going to have some sort of, mindset of, you know what, we don't want this woman beater on our team?
So
and
you
then
know
you tell
what?
Me what happens then.
I can't stand you, Sean Black, right now, because with 10 seconds left, he has a very important question of the night that could lead to a 30-minute discussion? Come on, man. Come on, Sean.
That's called a tease, my friend. She's something poor. To make you think.
For next year? For next year?
Hey, but if you were the local reporter, whatever in Chicago, the next you episode wasn't going to talk about Mike gambling because you wanted access to Mike for interviews to make money for yourself. So that's
yeah.
why
okay,
you get
well,
into the access part.
Well, Brother B, Nas, Sean, K-Dog, happy holidays, happy new year. Till next time. Thank you so much, and have a good night.
Pleasure was all yours.
Pleasure was all yours.